We're going to go through, and God willing, okay, this 15th chapter of Numbers, and chapter 16 and chapter 17. Now, 16 is pretty long, but it's not that hard to walk through it. So I would like for us to kind of read, have that be read, and we will learn some more things about what God has in mind.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, and say to them, When you have come into the land you are to inhabit, which I am giving to you, and you make an offering by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering or a sacrifice, to fulfill a vow, or as a freewill offering, or in your appointed feast, to make a sweet aroma to the Lord, from the herd or the flock, then he who presents his offering to the Lord shall bring a grain offering of 1/10 of an ephah of fine flour, mixed with 1/4 of a hin of oil, and 1/4 of a hin of wine, as a drink offering you shall prepare with the burnt offering or the sacrifice for each lamb. Or for a ram, you shall prepare as a grain offering 2/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/3 of a hin of oil. And as a drink offering you shall offer 1/3 of a hin of wine as a sweet aroma to the Lord. And when you prepare a young bull as a burnt offering, or as a sacrifice to fulfill a vow, or as a peace offering to the Lord, then you shall be offered, then shall be offered with the young bull a grain offering of 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with 1/2 hin of oil. And you shall bring as the drink offering 1/2 hin of wine as an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. Thus it shall be done for each young bull, for each ram, or for each lamb or young goat, according to the number that you prepare, so you shall do with every one according to their number. All who are native born shall do these things in this manner, in presenting an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. And if a stranger dwells with you, or whoever is among you throughout your generations, and would present an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord, just as you do, so shall he do. One ordinance shall be for you of the assembly, and one for the stranger who dwells with you, an ordinance forever throughout your generations, as you are, so shall the stranger be before the Lord. One law and one custom shall be for you and for the stranger who dwells with you. Again the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, When you come into the land to which I bring you, then it will be, when you eat of the bread of the land, that you shall offer up a heave offering to the Lord. You shall offer up a cake of the first of your ground meal as a heave offering, as a heave offering of the threshing floors, so shall you offer it up. Of the first of your ground meal, you shall give to the Lord a heave offering throughout your generations. If you sin unintentionally and do not observe all these commandments which the Lord has spoken to Moses, all that the Lord has commanded you by the hand of Moses from the day the Lord gave commandment and onward throughout your generations, then it will be, if it is unintentionally committed, without the knowledge of the congregation, that the whole congregation shall offer one young bull as a burnt offering, as a sweet aroma to the Lord, with its grain offering and its drink offering according to the ordinance, and one kid of the goats as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for the whole congregation of the children of Israel, and it shall be forgiven them. For it was unintentional. They shall bring their offering, an offering made by fire to the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord for their unintended sin. It shall be forgiven the whole congregation of the children of Israel and the stranger who dwells among them, because all the people did it unintentionally. And if a person sins unintentionally, then he shall bring a female goat in its first year as a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for the person who sins unintentionally, when he sins unintentionally before the Lord, to make atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. You shall have one law for him who sins unintentionally, for him who is native-born among the children of Israel, and for the stranger who dwells among them. But the person who does anything presumptuously, whether he is native-born or a stranger, that one brings reproach on the Lord, and he shall be cut off from among his people, because he has despised the word of the Lord and has broken his commandment. That person shall be completely cut off. His guilt shall be upon him. Now, while the children of Israel were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering sticks on the Sabbath. And those who found him gathering sticks brought him to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation. They put him under guard, because it had not been explained what should be done to him. Then the Lord said to Moses, "The man must surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him with stones outside the camp." So, as the Lord commanded Moses, all the congregation brought him outside the camp and stoned him with stones, and he died. Again, the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, and to put a blue thread in the tassels of the corners. And you shall have the tassel, that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined, and that you may remember and do all my commandments and be holy for your God. I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord your God." Now Korah the son, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. And they rose up before Moses with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, representatives of the congregation, men of renown. They gathered together against Moses and Aaron, and said to them, "You take too much upon yourselves, for all the congregation is holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord?" So when Moses heard it, he fell on his face. And he spoke to Korah and all his company, saying, "Tomorrow morning the Lord will show who is his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near to him, that one whom he chooses he will cause to come near to him. Do this: take censers, Korah and all your company, put fire in them and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it shall be that the man whom the Lord chooses is the holy one. You take too much upon yourselves, you sons of Levi." Then Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi. Is it a small thing to you that God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve them, and that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi, with you? And are you seeking the priesthood also? Therefore, you and all your company are gathered together against the Lord. And what is Aaron that you complain against him?" And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab. But they said, "We will not come up. Is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you should keep acting like a prince over us? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." Then Moses was very angry and said to the Lord, "Do not respect their offering. I have not taken one donkey from them, nor have I hurt one of them." And Moses said to Korah, "Tomorrow you and all your company be present before the Lord, you and they, as well as Aaron. Let each take his censer and put incense in it, and each of you bring his censer before the Lord. 250 censers, both you and Aaron, each with his censer." So every man took his censer, put fire in it, laid incense on it, and stood at the door of the tabernacle of meeting with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the congregation. And the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell on their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and you be angry with all the congregation? So the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the congregation, saying, Get away from the tents of Korah, Dathan and Abiram. Then Moses rose and went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, Depart now from the tents of these wicked men, touching nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins. So they got away from around the tents of Korah, Dathan and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents, with their wives, their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, By this you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own will. If these men die naturally, like all men, or if they are visited by the common fate of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord creates a new thing, and the earth opens its mouth and swallows them up with all that belongs to them, and they go down alive into the pit, then you will understand that these men have rejected the Lord. Now it came to pass, as he finished speaking all these words, that the ground split apart under them, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up, with their households, and all the men with Korah, with all their goods. So they and all those with them went down alive into the pit. The earth closed over them, and they perished from among the assembly. Then all Israel, who were around them, fled at their cry, for they said, Lest the earth swallow us up also. And a fire came out from the Lord, and consumed the 250 men who were offering incense. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, to pick up the censers out of the blaze, for they are holy, and scatter the fire some distance away. The censers of these men who sinned against their own souls, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, because they presented them before the Lord. Therefore they are holy, and they shall be a sign to the children of Israel. So Eleazar, the priest, took the bronze censers, which those who were burned up had presented, and they were hammered out as a covering on the altar, to be a memorial to the children of Israel, that no outsider, who is not a descendant of Aaron, should come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he might not become like Korah and his companions, just as the Lord had said to him through Moses. On the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron, saying, You have killed the people of the Lord. Now it happened, when the congregation had gathered against Moses and Aaron, that they turned toward the tabernacle of meeting, and suddenly the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. Then Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of meeting, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Get away from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell on their faces. So Moses said to Aaron, Take a censer and put fire in it from the altar, put incense on it, and take it quickly to the congregation, and make atonement for them. For wrath has gone out from the Lord, the plague has begun. Then Aaron took it as Moses commanded, and ran into the midst of the assembly, and already the plague had begun among the people. So he put in the incense and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, so the plague was stopped. Now those who died in the plague were 14,700, besides those who died in the Korah incident. So Aaron returned to Moses at the door of the tabernacle of meeting, where the plague had stopped. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel, and get from them a rod from each father's house, all their leaders according to their father's house, 12 rods. Write each man's name on his rod. And you shall write Aaron's name on the rod of Levi, for there shall be one rod for the head of each father's house. Then you shall place them in the tabernacle of meeting before the testimony where I meet with you. And it shall be that the rod of man whom I choose will blossom. This I will rid myself of the complaints. Thus I will rid myself of the complaints of the children of Israel, which they make against you. So Moses spoke to the children of Israel, and each of their leaders gave him a rod of a piece, for each leader, according to their father's houses, 12 rods, and the rod of Aaron was among their rods. And Moses placed the rods before the Lord in the tabernacle of witness. Now it came to pass on the next day that Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, and behold, the rod of Aaron of the house of Levi had sprouted and put forth buds, had produced blossoms, and yielded ripe almonds. Then Moses brought out all the rods from before the Lord to all the congregation of Israel, and they looked, and each man took his rod. And the Lord said to Moses, bring Aaron's rod back before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put their complaints away from me, lest they die. Thus did Moses, just as the Lord had commanded him, so he did. So the children of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, surely we die, we perish, we all perish. Whoever even comes near the tabernacle of the Lord must die. Shall we all utterly die?
All right. It's a lot to go through, but I want to go through the 15th chapter relatively quick, because most of that stuff we had gone through in the book of Exodus in detail. So, although it need to be read, the only thing I want to comment is that on verse 2, chapter 15, he says that when you come into the land of your inhabitants, I'm reading Old King James here, which I give unto you. Now remember, they already were rejected from going in because they rebelled against God, right? And we all read where he killed all the spies except for two. Now, we got that part. And then there's a few others that try to say, well, we'll go in there anyway. And, of course, no, not all of them died, but a certain amount of them died. Later on, we'll find out that they actually did send back in, and they did get vengeance for killing of those men that went into the land without God's promise, or protection, I should say. So, one thing about this, and we've gone through a great deal about how the offering is, how much it should do, but of the sin offering and the whole offering and so on and so forth. And we drop down now to, once again, the 15th verse, 18th verse. And he says, when you come into the land, remember they were rejected from going. Now he talks about what's called the bread, the menhah offering. He calls what's called a heave offering. A heave offering, basically, in the simplicity of the matter, it's called of the 10%. So there's a part of the heave offering or the grain offering that you have. That part of it, only like a handful of it, it's called the heave offering. That's what is given unto the Lord from that point on. The rest of the tenth, rest of the menhah offering belongs to the family of Levite, primarily the priesthood. All right. So in a nutshell, what that basically, when they use the term heave offering. It's also used in another area, but well, not that far down the line. So 15th chapter was kind of like it's a repeat of an awful lot that took place. Now, the other things are very fascinating, though. He talked about sinning through ignorance, 27th chapter, 27th verse. Now, we have no idea when this took place. All we know that event took place. It could have happened that time, I doubt it. But how God does, remember, he's not on chronological order. He says, now, about this, presumptuously, this is what you happens. And then all of a sudden, we have a story of someone who did something presumptuously. And it was a very severe thing. And remember, what does doing something presumptuously mean? Knowingly. Oh, see, that's a big difference between ignorance, right? And so we have the story of the person gathering sticks on the Sabbath. And knowingly, he was told and knew not to do that. Now, what time, we don't know. I would assume, quote, he's gathering sticks because it's probably maybe cold at night. And so you got to keep the fire going at night. And so you want to keep the fire or for food cooking, whatever it is. We don't know what one way or the other. But it has no bearing to the point. The point is being something, doing something which you were told not to do. Now, Moses did not know how to handle the problem. Moses didn't presumptuously assume he knew what to do. And so we have a story here of how it is to be handled with. And so he did this. And so the man was, of course, we know, stoned to death. That's a little different thing, you know. The next section kind of tells us basically what happens when somebody does something that is done in, not in ignorance. Ignorance, that's okay. If you didn't know, God has not let you know about it, or you were unaware of it, then that's where mercy comes in. Judgment still has to happen, but mercy comes in. But on this particular case, now, you know, God has a line. I heard this term, the word, you always this verb of, he's got a line in the sand. No, I think it's actually in stone. Sand can cover it up real quickly, the wind can cover it all up. But when it's in stone, it's really difficult to get it out of the stone. Especially when God put the line in the stone, right? So I got a funny, when we think about those terminology, I don't know where, to tell you the honest truth, where that terminology came from, except I think it happened in a battle. I'm assuming it, that you know, the enemy was there. You cross this line, we'll go to war. He crossed the line. You cross that line, we'll go to war. I keep backing it up because sand, oh, you just covered the sand. Anybody know where that phrase comes from? Be fascinating. Can't remember what it says. It's kind of a funny statement. Yeah. Do you have no? I just popped my brain right now. I should have looked that up and found out. But so we see he shall be put to death, and the congregation shall stone him. And so the leadership of the house of Israel, the elders, were in there and stoning them to death because he did something presumptuously. Even when Moses going to God saying, "What must I do?" He waited to hear from what God had to say first. Yes, Jeff.
It's kind of interesting. The Hebrew for presumptuously is with a high hand.
Yeah.
Or an exalted hand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
it's a pretty powerful terminology in Hebrew.
It's basically like, you know, giving God the finger, basically.
Yeah. It's not. I'm offending you. When I'm offending you, I'm going to do the law anyway, break the law anyway. Because, see, even if you transgress the law knowingly, God will forgive you. But this is a little bit different. Presumptuously is a more powerful, I'm against God. Now, we talk about this. I'll talk about, again, that Hebrew word phrase that translated as murmur in many places does not mean what we think it means. It means stopping. Putting to a stop the actions of God. I put my thought mind, thinking about it today. You remember when Yahshua went in there to heal, I can't remember, a girl, right offhand? And he says, "I cannot do this. Get rid of the people. They're stopping me from doing this." Well, that's a fascinating phrase, isn't it? What do you mean? You're the creator of heaven and earth. You're the son of the creator of heaven and earth. You can stop. You can do anything you want. No, he was hindered from doing it. Have a second. And then it comes this thing of you can hinder the spirit of the living God. Tammy.
According to this, the drawing the line in the sand goes back to the Battle of Thermopylae. The Spartans drew a line in the sand.
Oh, okay, that's cool. The Spartans. That is cool. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Part of you don't know who Spartans are, but you should. I mean, it's a history of Rome. Part of history of Rome. We're going to go down to the 32nd verse of chapter 15. It's while the children were in the wilderness, they found a man gathering in the sticks on the Sabbath day. So what was this? They were still in the wilderness. Now, we don't know. How long were they in the wilderness? At least 40 years plus. Okay, at least that long. So we don't know when this took place. It could have happened in the middle of the 20 years. It could have happened the first part or the latter part, whatever it was. Anyway, we don't have a chronological date. Now, let's go down to verse 37 for a moment. All right, and talks about something. I'm reading the old English, please. Speak unto the children of Israel, and bid them that they make them fringes, or the tzitzit, on in the corner of their garments throughout the generations. And they put it upon the fringes, or the tzitzit, of the border, a rib band of blue. Rib band of blue. Now, Hebrew is a noun, and it comes from a twine, twisty. And it can be laced, and basically it comes, another word means like a blossom, flowery blossom thing. You weave it together like a flower petal, like a flower petal. Now, the one you have what's called a rabbinic thing of the, that's not necessarily what is here. And if you ever met someone from the Karaite segment, they don't wear that. They have a different one. They actually have a cord, and it's weaved, and it's on their garment, but it's around the border of the garment. It's not dangling down like we think of tzitzit, a piece of string. And it goes back to the time, remember when Yahshua had this woman, was 18 years, and she touched and it says here in your English, the rim. And she wasn't touching the string, she's touching that cord that was around. Now we think of corners. We think of corners of this corner and this corner and that corner and that corner. It doesn't mean corner. It means the edge, all around the edge. And so therefore, when you put it on, you're going to put this garment on, you're going to see that ridge of blue. It's not mixed with any other color. It's not mixed with white. It's not mixed with black. It's not mixed with anything. It's blue. The blue cord type of divine. And it's twisted and twined like a fist.
Tzitzit from in Israel, they don't have the blue.
No, they have black or whatever.
Well, yeah, because there's infighting about
right. The
color blue, I guess, and so they just don't put any blue in it. But the other thing, I think it's interesting that they go right into the tzitzit after they stone the man, and it's like God is saying, here it says the sages thought that this man was committing the sin of idolatry. He was placing himself above the creator of heaven and earth. It's just like God goes right into the tzitzit so that you may see and obey and remember.
You listen to what she's saying to you now? What she says is this thing about the blue ribbon or blue cord was not instituted during the time of Abraham, Isaac, or Jacob. Wasn't instituted when Moses was born. It didn't come on the scene until they were in the wilderness. And this particular individual presumptuously did it. So now God says, I want you to put this on so you remember something. Okay? And it's a reminder of, you remember that guy that got killed? I stoned him to death? Remember him? He presumptuously. So I want you to have it so you remember. You remember. So it's the tzitzit is for remembrance of us, to remember what took place here. Do you understand what she's saying? Yes.
In a sense, the tzitzit is a commitment to remind yourself.
Right, not others.
Yeah, but to remind yourself to be obedient. Because that guy got killed. It's like so many times it's changing a don't into a do. So it gives you something to do instead of just remember don't, then do this. And if you do that, then you won't.
I've told you color blue. Now the word tzitzit is where it means a flower. The word tzitzit means a flower, not a string, a flower, a blossom. Now, you remember, we'll get here, I think. Yes, we'll get to it. There was a certain kind of blossom that was used for the menorah. Okay, so we have a pattern there. All of a sudden, God is saying, by the way, I want you to make something that resembles something. You know, so it's kind of fascinating when you start thinking about this thing, because it comes later on in this section we're talking about. He says, you put the tzitzit on, then you shall seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which you are using a whoredom. We went through whoredom last week, remember? And how he explained what the whoredom means. And it does mean going after other Elohim, that you may remember and do my, verse 40, my commandments, and be holy unto your Elohim. I am Yahuwah, your Elohim, which brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your Elohim. I am Yahuwah, your Elohim. So in the sense, what she was saying, remember what she said something about? An idol. If you shift from any other direction, out of what, if you presumptuously, put in the language, go against God, then guess what? You have another Elohim you're going to follow. You're going to obey a different God, a different power, a different source. And that's what basically we see here in this particular chapter. Before I go on the 16th chapter, any questions about the 50th one? Or input? Jeff.
Well, this is also one of the primary passages that many critics of the Bible bring up because of this guy, gathering sticks, death penalty.
Yeah.
Isn't that just a bit overblown, or as the term is used today, unproportional?
Yes, today would be politically incorrect, and God would be put on trial. And guess what God would be found? He'd be found guilty, wouldn't he? There reminds me of a movie we saw. I think it was not a true story, but there was a group of Jews during they were in one of those concentration camps, and they had a trial, and they found God guilty. And guess what happened to them all? They all were killed. Oh dear, ooh, isn't that good? I don't know if that's a true story or not. Oh, it was. He said it was. Yeah. Okay. But I don't remember the name of the movie now. But it's just an interesting story. You had a question statement?
You made me lose what I was going to say. It's gone.
It's gone. Sorry. Right behind you, Jeff.
Just want to comment that the tzitzit are meant to be seen by you and others, I think.
Well,
you know, you have to see them and remember.
Right.
You know, to do. So
I'm not anti-stringing one. I don't, if you want them on their street, that's, I'm not anti, I'm not against that. Because it's supposed to remind you of something.
Right.
All right? Yes.
Okay. To me, it sounds like most people would say, out of proportion. Okay? When you have, let's say you've got a big family, you've got 10 kids, and you have made one rule of don't very clear, and then the one who tends to be, I would say, instigator, but let's say has strong leadership over the group, deliberately and openly defies the parental absolute instruction, something has to give. It may seem overly harsh, but it's written down here for us to know that God is not kidding.
Now, I want to give a glass of water, but I want you to think what the next two chapters are addressing. Remember we talked about patterns, where God uses a pattern, then He uses another pattern, then He uses another pattern to show us a pattern. Does not mean it happened. The next 16th chapter and 15th chapter does not mean it happened immediately right after this incident. It means now we're going to have another story of presumptuously doing something. Now, we sometimes focus, we may start focusing upon the thing about gathering and lighting the candle, lighting this, lighting that, and that's a great sin to God, okay? That's just one of the one, and kind of in what, you see, like it's overdraft, overkilling, right? God went far beyond as necessary to be, why don't you just discipline him? Why don't you give him a good spanking? You know, put chains on him. I don't put him in prison or whatever, but don't kill him for it, right? But it's telling us a story. The 16th chapter is a story of two groups of people. Similar, not exactly like, but similar to the point of being presumptuously. It does not mean it happened immediately. If most of you know this by now, but I'll repeat myself again. It's not God never writes things in chronological order unless He has something in mind to show us. Pattern, this event, and this event, and this event. There is a unreal pattern, including the last one in the book of 17th chapter, which has to do with the rod. Pattern. This is how you stop it. All right. Sons of Levi, chapter 16. And the sons of Reuben. One of the families of the sons of Levi and one of the families of the sons of Reuben. So we have to kind of put a comparison. Now, what was the name of the one of the sons of the family of Reuben? What was their tribe from? Kohath. Kohath, one of the three main Levites, right? You remember them, who they are? Where was Kohath to be located? You forgot. What part of the tabernacle congregation were they told to do? No. Okay, we'll have to go back. I want you to go to Numbers chapter 3, verse 2. I'll read it, so you don't have to go back there. Their duties included the ark, the table, the lampstand, the altars, the utensils of the sanctuary, which they ministered, the screen that is the first veil, and the works gathering of them. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, was to be chief over the leaders of the Levites, those particular group of Levites, oversight to those who are charged of the sanctuary. Because they couldn't touch the stuff, remember? Eleazar could touch the stuff and put covers over them. But now they had to carry it out. So that was their function. And they were south. They were at the southern border. Where was the tribe of Reuben? And the southern border. They're both in the same area. Now listen very carefully as we read this story. All right? Because something took place in the Kohath there, and it infected and influenced some of the family of Reuben directly. We'll get to that point here. Sorry, what?
Kohath.
This was one of the tribes of the Levites. They had three Levites that were in charge of helping the priesthood. I pronounce it as Kohath or Kohath. K-O-H-A-T-H or just with a T. Okay? We're in the 16th chapter, by the way, of Numbers. Now, comes the second verse. And he says, and they rose up, I'm reading this in Old English now, rose up before Moses and certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, and men of renown. Now, we'll find out that these 250 were not from the family of Reuben, but from the family of Kohath. We'll find that as we keep on going. They're the ones that rose up against Moses, went toward Moses. All right. The Reubenite family did not come up against Moses. Moses had to go up against them. So these are the ones that came up against Moses. And his name was Korah, right? The chief amongst them, or one of the chief. He was not the primary one named as the one who is responsible for that section of the Levitical priesthood, of Levitical priests, Levites, rather. So there were three of them. There was another man in charge of that particular section, but it was not Korah. And so they gathered themselves against Moses and against Aaron. Okay? And we kind of know what the story goes on. And he says, and every one of them, meaning those referring to those who were with Korah, and the next two verses kind of addresses them, or in a very fascinating statement. Now, there was something that they had said. What did they say? Remember what they said? Why did they rise up against him? What was their statement? You don't remember what they were saying to him? All right. They were said, who are you? These are holy. He wasn't referring now to all the tribes of Israel. He is referring to his people, his leaders that were there, because they were moving into position to do what? Take over what? The priesthood. They were challenging not Moses here, but challenging Aaron. Very important. Because that is presumptuously that they say, these are all holy. And then Moses said something. We'll find out who is holy. Remember what we read in the book of Leviticus? What's this thing on top of Aaron's head? Holy unto Elohim. Or holy unto Yahuwah. Korah wanted to be holy unto them. There's only one. There's only one. Not the entire, just one. The high priest is to wear that, and he is the one that is called holy unto Yahuwah. Now, Korah wanted that. Doesn't tell you what time. They're in the wilderness here. We don't know what time event took place. We don't know what before had to be. It could have been after. I would assume it had been after what took place with the man gathering sticks. But we have a picture here of a pattern here. You see this pattern? That happened over here. Now what's that pattern? Now we have Korah. What is he doing? Presumptuously challenging something. All right. Do you see the pattern? The next one is yes.
He's representing Lucifer that says, I want to be like the Most High.
Okay, with that in mind, what was Moses? What did God call Moses? What did God call Moses? You are Elohim, and Aaron is your prophet. So God, Moses is playing the role. God gave him the role of being Elohim, the creator of heaven and earth. A picture, an image. And the next one is the prophet. Very interesting word. He didn't say high priest. He said prophet. Okay, representing, of course, the Messiah here. So we have a picture. When you think of Moses, you think of Aaron. Think of it in that pattern. We're talking about the creator of heaven and earth, the Father. And we're talking about Yahshua. Because high priest represents the picture or the functions of or the duties of what the Son of God was to do when he became high priest. He didn't become high priest until after his death and resurrection. He wasn't one before. All right, so we have a pattern here. Now he says that every one of them. Let's go down to verse. Um, Okay, verse 5. And Moses, he spoke unto Korah and unto all his company, the 250, all right, saying, even tomorrow, Yahuwah will show who are his and who is holy. And will cause him to come near unto him, Yahuwah, even him who he, Yahuwah, has chosen, will he, Yahuwah, cause to come unto him, Yahuwah. Okay, now we have a real threat. He's going to present this situation. So he tell them what to do. What did he tell them to do? He wanted to take something from them. What do you want to take? He says, seems unto me that Elohim of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of Yahuwah and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. And we have read what their job was, right? Very important function. They're touching, they have to move the holy things, the sacred things, especially in that inner tabernacle. All right? Verse 10, and he, Yahuwah, hath brought thee near unto him, or unto Yahuwah himself, and all thy brethren and sons of Levi with thee, and you seek what? The priesthood also? So here was the battle. Here was the argument. Here was this a presumptuous. Now remember, keep one thing in mind. Moses said in the book of Deuteronomy, we're not there at all, but he said to the congregation, none of you saw anybody. You did not see God. You did not see the hand of God. You did not see him at all. Of course, Moses did, but they didn't see. All they saw was what? The actions that Moses was doing and the actions that Aaron was doing. They weren't seeing the actions of God. They weren't seeing the actions of the high priesthood at all, any relationship to them at all. It's a picture, right? L.A.?
They never got to read, and the Lord said to Moses.
They never got to read. Yes. But they got to see. Remember, God spoke to Moses more than anybody else.
For perspective to seeing it this way.
And then he goes down at verse 11. He says, well, halfway through it, he said, what is it, Aaron, that you have, here's the word, murmured against him. I'm told that word in Hebrew does not mean murmuring, complaining. It means you are stopping Aaron from doing his function. Now, there's another Hebrew word that comes in, has to do with complaining and griping. By the way, every time someone complains and gripes, you stop somebody from doing something. Look at it in your own personal private life. When you complain, gripe, have an argument against, let's say, your employer, the immediate boss, you stop him from doing his job. Right? Because, oh no, I didn't stop him. I want to talk to him and tell him how bad he is. You stopped him from his function. Same thing that when you complain and murmur against God, you do what? You stop him from doing. And God only allowed it 10 times. Remember that? 10 times. That's it. No more. Not going to happen. Now we're reading here what happens when he tries to stop Moses and tries to stop Aaron from carrying out the function that God had them to do. Now sometimes we don't think it's very important. Because he's just men. All right? Remember what I told you that I like to try to explain to you when we read the book of Numbers, especially the book of Numbers, we are reading what God did. And now we see the actions or lack of actions, what the people did when God did something. God didn't do something after the people did something. He did something first, then the people have to respond to what he did. Right? Now, you don't think I'm talking about? What about Abraham? Did not God tell Abraham what he's going to do? Yeah. So now, we see in history, later on, what happened to the people when God instituted what he told Abraham he was going to do. What was their reaction? Some of them liked it, and some of them didn't. Some of them complained, murmured, and stopped the actions, and some of them didn't. They kept going. Right? You understand what I'm saying so far? These were planned by God, and God has this in mind. When we talk about, I told you the 40 years was part of the plan of God, we say, well, no, it wasn't. That came in later. No, no. Because God told Abraham specifically how many years, down to the date. So 40 years in the wilderness was planned. It didn't come about because, oh, God says, and you didn't respond. I'm going to have to. What am I going to do to you? Okay, I'm not going to let you go there. You know? He didn't change his plan. His plan was always there. So we see in the actions here now what God does when people say, oh, I don't like what you have planned. And here we have the priesthood, and he wants to take over, Korah wants to take over the priesthood, who was even responsible for his section of the Levites. Somebody else was. And now Moses goes to the sons of Reuben. And because remember, they would not come up. Right? They were not going to come up. Okay? So he went to them. And he said, we're not going to come up. So Moses went down to them. And he said, it's a small thing that thou hast brought us up. Now, this is what the two brothers are saying. It's a small thing that you have brought us up to the land of milk and honey. And you made yourself king, ruler, priesthood. Not priesthood, but no, he wasn't a priesthood, but the one responsible for delivering them out of Egypt. But you remember what God said to Moses? One of the burning bush thing? He says, I come down here now to deliver my people out of the house of Israel. Moses, go get them. My job here? No, no, go get it. Bring him out. So Moses actually, with acting in the action of the Creator of heaven and earth, was putting into action what he said he was going to do. And he used Moses to show us, the story of Moses shows us, the life of Moses shows us, not as a man, but his actions. When he's acting out what God carries out, that tells you how God carries things out. How God does things. Period. Point blank. And, of course, we have here, 16th chapter here. And verse 14, I find it very fascinating here. I'm reading in Old English. 14 to verse 8. Moreover, thou, talking to Moses now, hast not brought us into the land of blowing milk and honey, nor have you given us any head in the field of vineyard. You failed, Moses. You didn't do your job, Moses. You're a downright lousy leader. That's the accusation. Well, they didn't get there. See, they didn't see the picture that God said, I'm not going to let the men go in there. They didn't hear that. Moses heard that. He told the people, don't go. God's not with you. And since he didn't back them up, go with them to go into the land from where they were started at, he stayed where he was at. And these people went, they got killed. Guess who gets blamed for the killing? Moses gets blamed for the killing. Not God, Moses. That's what Aaron's supposed to have been. No. And then, of course, Moses said, okay, he was very wrath. He said something very strong to God. Verse 15, respect not thou their offerings. Wow. Guess what? He didn't. He didn't take their offerings. Okay, I know later on he actually took their life, but now he dresses back now. He goes back to Korah and those are with Korah. And he says, verse 16, and he's talking to Korah, and he says, but thou and thy company before Yahuwah thou shalt say and to Aaron tomorrow, take what with you? 250 censers. So each one of the members of the family of Levi that were with Korah, they were renowned, important, well-liked, popular. They were, you know, politically ready for take action, you know, they're getting voted. They're the ones that really were more valuable in the family of that particular segment of Levite than even the leader who was supposed to be responsible for all the Levites. On that, in that, in that, in the Koth line. And let's see what the outcome is going to be, right? Pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty heavy stuff. And so he did. And verse 19, of course, they went into the tabernacle, or before the tabernacle of congregation. And verse 19, and the Korah gathered the congregation, that is those that were Korah only. He didn't gather the entire congregation of all the house of Israel. No, just those 220. Just those. When you read the word Torah and it's used the word all, we think everything under the sun. Well, no, it's not. It means all of those that were with Korah. Doesn't mean all of Israel, just those that were with Korah. Very careful. We must not put everybody in the same package. You remember what happened to the during time of the golden calf? And there's all, every one of them. No. Just 3,000 who were affected by it. That was all of those who were affected and did this. Their life was taken and not the life of every Israelite. Yes, Ellie.
Not all of Korah's family died either, because some...
Also, put this in the shoe. Not all, only the leadership died. Their wives lived, their children lived, as Korah's wife lived and Korah's children lived. So it's not just Korah. I don't see that written.
Yeah.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Well, let me get there, because I didn't see that, but let me get there. Because I don't find it says his wife died. Don't get that confused with Reuben and his two brothers. That family died. Don't get those consumed. Because listen to what Hebrew has to say when that statement comes up. Very carefully listen to what it says, and we don't get a picture of Korah and his family there. They weren't covered up with... Korah was not killed by an earthquake opening up and swallowing them. A fire killed him. A fire killed the 250. Their ashes were there. And what was left from those 250 were census. The brass... Censors. Okay, keep that part in mind. When we get to... We haven't gotten to the... Remember I told you there's three rebellions here? There's a pattern. The first pattern was who? The what? The fire guy, yeah. Okay. And the second one right now is Korah. We're getting Korah's first. Then we're going to get Reuben, the two sons of Reuben. All of them presumptuously. See the pattern? 1, 2, 3. Now when we get to the 17th chapter, we will see how that can be prevented from ever happening again. We're not there yet. Okay, you follow me so far? Where am I at now? And anyway, Moses said, verse 22, when God said he's going to kill them all, verse 22, he said, and they fell on their faces, both Aaron and Moses, and said, O Elohim, the Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin? And wilt thou be wrath with the whole congregation, those with Korah? The answer is yes. Because he did. when you, we'll talk about that phrase, when you join yourself with or become part of that presumptuous order and you go along with the popularity, guess what happens to you? You know, we have this law in our country sometimes. You know, if you are, you know, in a crime and you're not the one that has the gun, but somebody has a gun and they kill somebody, are you guilty of the death of that person or is the person who pulled the trigger guilty? And then God, you're all guilty. You have joined with a killer. You're good as dead. You're responsible for the death. But in our country, oh no, we don't want to do that. It's too harsh. I'll tell you, stop gangs really quick. My personal opinion, when the gang leaders kill somebody, pew, all the gang members are dead. Ooh, I think I need to stop being part of a gang. Depart, leave. We don't like it that because, see, God's that powerful. You know, we don't like God being that. We want Him to be kind, gentle, loving, merciful, with compassion, and ever loving, ever patient. But we don't really understand what that really means with God. He actually has a line, and it's very firm, and it's very stable, and it's locked in place. Yes?
Do we know how much time between the man who was stoned to death for gathering sticks?
No, it doesn't tell you that.
Okay, so is it like about a year, you think?
We don't know.
I'm
not even come close to guessing that. I assume it happened before, but I don't know what happened 1 year, 2 years, or 10 years earlier, because I don't know what point in time here we're in history. God did not bring out time of history. We all know what just happened after the spies rejected, and then God killed the spies, except for two of them. Yes?
You're right. It doesn't say that Korach... But it does say his house was destroyed.
Well, get to the house. Don't get confused with the house.
His possessions.
His position was, that's right. His position of his authority was gone.
Possession.
Yeah, everything of his, but not his children.
Right. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't
now, the
say
other
that.
Ones, his children were killed.
Everything.
Okay, so don't get those two stories confused. Okay. Because and Korah was killed by fire. His wife wasn't killed by fire.
He was part of the 250.
Now, what happens when Korah died, who took over the possessions that Korah had? Other Levites. They took them. Somebody had to take in Korah's wife because now she's a widow. Somebody had to take in Korah's children because now they are fatherless. The Torah still had to be obeyed, even by the Levites. All right. Now God's saying to them, get you from the tabernacle of Korah, Datah, and Aram. So, Aram. And so the people, he took the elders. Now, who are the elders of Israel? Chapter 1 tells you the names of the elders, 12 of them. Those are the ones they took with them. None of these brothers were the elders. So the 12 tribe leaders went with them. Now it's very important why he had them take with them. We'll get to that later on in the story. Yes?
It does say, however, that everybody that sided with Korach was killed.
That's
does
correct.
Does that mean
when
that his wife was
we
get, not siding
no, no, no,
with
no. She didn't side. The son didn't even side with him. The ones that sided with Korah were who? The 250. That's the ones.
Okay.
Those are the ones that sided with them. Now we get to Dana, the tribe of Dana and Reuben. They sided with Korah. And their wives agreed. And their children agreed. And guess what happened to them? They're dead. Because they agreed with, and it says there, they sided with or accompanied with, they went along with, they were influenced by Korah. Korah wasn't number one. That's why he's named first. And the event of the other two brothers came later. Or came in soon thereafter. Actually, I think they were killed first. And then those who were with Korah died secondly. I find these extremely interesting chapters. Sometimes numbers could get you very bored. You read the story. Okay, the dead. Let's go on with life. We have the picture of what the story going to tell us. When you stand up against God, something's going to happen. When you try to stop God, something's going to happen to you. He's going to stop you. Is that not true? You try to stop Him, He's going to stop you. How does God stop the people here so far? He killed them. Wow. What a stoppage point. We don't like to hear that God actually kills people. Yet we have this banner that says El Shaddai. And Shaddai means what? The one, the deluger, the one that brings on the flood, the one that killed everybody except 8 people. We say, well, no, God didn't kill them. They brought it on themselves. God didn't say that. He says, I killed them.
I'm just trying to understand. So were the 250 offering incense to the Lord, and then Moses said, come here, you 12 leaders of Israel, we're going to go to Dathan and Abiram.
Right.
And,
he wanted the leadership to know.
So these were kind of happening at
the same
time.
We'll get why he brought the leadership, because later on we'll find in this chapter something that the leadership said they should never have said. Even seeing the evidence. All right?
Okay.
And then it introduces the 17th chapter. Why that 17th chapter was brought about at about the rod that budded. All right? It just didn't happenstance. It was for the leadership of Israel to see. Not for the priesthood to see. Not for the congregation of Israel to see. But for those 12 tribes of Israel, the leadership, who were appointed in chapter number 1, to see. All right? So they would fully understand where God is at. Excuse me. Now, I find this very interesting. In verse 30, this is Moses talking. But if Yahuwah make a thing, or new thing, and the earth opens up her mouth, talking about the two brothers, and swallows them with all that aspiration unto them, and they go down into the pit, that ye shall understand what these men have provoked Yahuwah. Now, before he said, by the way, you know, if they died naturally, what else is new? But it didn't happen naturally, did it? Now, the funny thing I found, this is very funny, because here, it is where those of the south encampment, not the west encampment, not the north encampment, not the east encampment, but the south encampment. All right? Along with all the leaders of the rest of the tribe, that is the 12 leaders that from chapter 1, the names of those men, and even, of course, the two tribes that were with Reuben were there, leadership. And you would think this event would do something. You would think that it surely would have given them great fear and great respect toward Moses. You would assume that, right? But no, it didn't. We'll see later on why he had the 12 leaders of Israel come. Explains it toward the end of the 17th chapter. And of course now, it says that those who were with, or coerced with, and it says there in Hebrew, basically, as the earth opened up their mouth and swallowed them and their houses and all the men that joined with Korah and all their goods. So the two men and their families were all gone and they all died. But Korah, what happened to them? Now let's go on now. And it came to pass, and then Israel were around about verse 34, and they fled. They're terrified. Well, about time they got afraid. But they weren't afraid of Moses. They were just afraid of dying, but they despised what Moses was doing, because all they saw was the hand of Moses. Because Moses said that. The voice came down from heaven. They heard no voice coming down and saying this. They heard it come out of the mouth of Moses. Right? And so they ended, their life was ended. And then it says here now, verse 35, and there was a fire from Yahuwah and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. Now, who offered the incense? Only those men who were with whom? Korah. They got burnt. Remember God said to do with the ashes, fire, just throw them out. What are you supposed to do with the incense burners? I want you to do something with it. What do you want them to do? Melt them down, reshape them, and put them as a cover, a blanket, over the altar. Why? Because he forgot to say, Moses, by the way, I forgot way back in Exodus, I forgot to tell you when you're building an altar, I forgot to tell you, I want a cover over that thing. No, he put the cover over there for the people of Israel to never forget that incident that took place here. What Korah was doing. Remember Moses said, why would you let other people die because of the sins of one man? Uh-oh. See, in our thinking, it's just unjustified. Just kill Korah. No. Rambo, 250 died, and the two brothers of the tribe of Reuben and their family all died. You don't join with presumptuously. Yes.
I mean, to me, the 250 were exalting themselves above God just as much as Korah was.
They were famous men.
They were following
popular
him.
Popular men. That's what it says.
Right. And they were jealous because, I mean, here's Moses. He appoints his brother high priest,
right,
and his two kids as Aaron's successors. So it's like nepotism, you know. Hey, it's all in your family. Come on.
Well, it really is all in the family.
Yeah.
Just which family are we talking about now? And it shall be a sign, verse 8-38, but do make us covering number, shall be a sign unto the children of Israel. Now, verse 40. It shall be memorial to the children of Israel that no stranger, that's what the Hebrew has, stranger, meaning nobody that is not of the family of Aaron, period, will ever offer this unto Yahuwah, only the sons of Aaron. And they all had to accept that as a reality. Now it's a real big, big lesson for not just that segment of the tribe of Levi, but you know what would have influenced the tribe of Levi that was on the north, the tribe of the Levites that was on the west. Who was on the east, by the way? No, of the high priest was on the east side. Okay, the high priest was the east side. Korah was on the south. Maraman, I think it was. It's on the west and the north. I can't remember who read a fan. Those other three sections, remember there's only three that are divided amongst the tribe of Levites. Okay, they were to help the priesthood. And the priesthood is supposed to be where? The priesthood was on the east side. The entrance way. Okay. Into the tabernacle. It's explained there, and I thought that I don't remember which chapter it was, but back there. And then, of course, this is amazing. Okay. Listen, what really amazing. And Aaron, the people said something. What did people say? You two have killed. They were murderers. In their eyes, these guys are murderers. They're killers. We got to end them. We got to stop them from killing. I'm putting in my words.
It's a good thing that I think these stories were told after the spy story, because now we can see more and more and more why God was correct in not letting these people into the land. They were not repentant. They had never repented of their sin of rebellion against him in the first place, but they're continuing to do it over and
back
over again.
It seemed
to
get worse and worse as time went by, right?
Yeah.
It seemed like it got worse and worse and worse.
She's so fearful after you saw what happened to the 250.
You're thinking logically now, Hal.
I'd be scared to death.
Well, some of them, they're like, afraid. They backed away from the earthquake like crazy. Okay? They were afraid that we could die. But they didn't fear what God has told them through Moses and Aaron. This was a test. It really was a real serious test. Very critical. In the wilderness, in that 40-year period, they had to learn something. What did they have to learn? It is God who makes the appointment. Okay. Well, I didn't hear him say anything. I didn't hear orders come down. Do you not know I've done all this thing through Moses? I've done all things through Aaron. This is a very amazing picture of Aaron. Awesome picture. Now, God sent a plague amongst the children. Guess what happened? But what did God, what did Moses say? Not what did Elohim say to Moses, to say to Aaron. What did Moses say to Aaron? Oh, take a censer, put fire therein from off of the altar, and put it in, put on incense, and go rapidly, quickly into the congregation and make an atonement for them. Atonement? But atonement can only be done by the blood of a goat or a blood of a lamb, a blood of something, right? No, it was the incense that became an atonement. Now, in the book of Revelations, what does incense represent? The prayers of the saint. They make it a request. So we have a picture here now, and we have, what did Aaron do? I mean, see people dying. He ran as fast as he could between, he stood between them. Here's a bunch of dead people. He kept running past the dead people. Here's the live people. He turned around. And the people stopped dying. Now, if you were Aaron, would you be a little bit afraid of running there into death? Yeah, you would. I would. Aaron never had a second thought. Now, let's move it into the Messiah. Did the Messiah run into death to stop the dying? Yes, he did. Wow. And what did he take with him? What did the Messiah take with him when he went into the period of death? The prayers of the righteous, his apostles, ones that became one. Those are the ones he died for. And he took them in there because, you see, a really righteous man, even Moses, didn't really want people to die, so much so that he sent his brother in and run as fast as you can. Stop the killing. Stop the killing. And he did. Wow. That's my mind is an awesome picture in my mind. I can't picture it. I got two people hit.
The Messiah would have taken 4,000 years worth of prayers of the people stored up waiting for him also. Not just his apostles, but people who knew that God would send another prophet and that this would happen. So it's, I think prayers are cumulative.
And so now we have this interesting story. We know, I don't want to go far, but you have a picture here. It's an awesome picture. But the people still were accusing Moses of the killing. Yes?
Well, when I see Moses said, okay, take fire from the altar and incense and go stand, it's kind of like the pillar of cloud by day and fire by night that God himself, and I don't know if that was Yeshua himself that protected the Israelites from the Egyptians. I mean, he came and right between them.
I know where I put in that. Yeah, true. I don't know how you ever get that. It's kind of cool. All he didn't do was kill the Egyptians with fire. Kill the Egyptian with water. Oh, dear. A deluge again.
You made the comment earlier that Moses was, like, you referred to him as Elohim.
And yeah. It says there in the, go to Exodus chapter One or two or three. In the very beginning when God is talking to, talking to Moses, he says, I will make you Elohim. Was it what I remember what chapter was, but yeah, Elohim to Pharaoh, which means to the enemy. Well, yes, I think chapter 2, chapter 3, something like that. Sound like it's chapter 2 or 3. Okay, it's very early in the book of Exodus. And you're a prophet. Let me ask you a question, however. Was he not, in the eyes of the Israelites, now, at this point, as powerful as Elohim? Yeah. Was not Aaron, at this point in time, as powerful as the prophet? Wow. Because these people were not for Elohim. They were not supporting Elohim. These, not all of Israel, we're talking the leadership seemed to do that, but there's one thing at 17th chapter, man, I want to go to this thing, I'm glad I went to this thing, because 17th chapter is a very fascinating chapter. He talked to Moses and says, by the way, I want all the elders, the leadership, the 12 from chapter 1, all names of those men, I want them all to bring a rod. And I want them to lay them down before the tabernacle of congregation. That means the tabernacle of the witness or tabernacle. We're talking about before the holy, before the entrance way. So they had taken and laid them down there. And guess what transpired? He had did something different. Because they were still blaming Moses for all the killing. Now we come here and he says, I want them to know who really and truly is in charge. And they must take home to their tribe to know, I have chosen who is what? Holy unto the Lord. Now, we may not like Moses. That's our problem, but not God's problem. Right? And of course, you know, here's this word, verse 5. And he says they were grumbling. And then he says in Israel, thereby they're stopping you, Moses. That's that word says murmur. And they murmur against, and you stop it, you're stopping against you, Moses. You're preventing Moses from doing something, and actually from Aaron from doing something. So these 12 men are now half beheld, okay, let's just prove to you who I have said who is holy unto me. And by the way, it ain't you. I'm sorry, it ain't you. It's my priesthood. In of chapter 1.
Earthquake and the swallowing up.
Right.
But they were not the men that raised up and were in league with Korah.
No, they were not.
Okay.
Tor was not one of the main leaders of the three Levites. He was one who's beneath the leader of the main man. Right. All right. He didn't like being a civil. Yeah, he wanted to be a boss. You know. And it comes down here, and it says in verse 8, and it came to pass that Moses went into the tabernacle of witness, or tabernacle of the testimony, or tabernacle where the Ten Commandments are at. And behold, the rod of bud of Aaron, the house of Levi, was budded. I find this fascinating. First thing, it budded. Let me ask you a question. Was the rod a living rod, or was the rod a dead rod? All the rods were dead. Now he's giving life to only one of them. Giving life to a dead rod. And that life becomes the high priest's rod. So when the Messiah comes, he will have a rod in his hand. And it will carry out his function. It'll just be as real as it can possibly be real. It'll not only will a bud begin something, and then it blossoms. And just one more thing, it produces fruit. Wow. Now we have the dead Messiah. Now he resurrected up from the grave. Put this in picture. Because he, the Messiah, is the rod of Elohim. How many years was Yahshua, when he resurrected from the dead, how many years was he in the budding stage? You think about this. Just think about this. How many years was he in the budding stage? And go another period of time. Now, how many years he's been in the blossoming age? You see blossoms coming up. And then, when does the fruit come forth? Pattern. 1, 2, 3. Interesting pattern. What will the rod of God do? It's going to bring forth something. It's going to bring forth the kingdom of God. I don't think it's produced fruit yet. It's producing the blossom. In a sense, spiritually speaking. This is Richard's thinking. Forget about everything else. The people of God are the blossoms. And when we are finally bringing forth fruit, then He can use us. And He will use us for His benefit. For the benefit of mankind. And that great blossom. And He said, now did He just do this because He wanted to do something? No, He says, for us to be a witness to the tribes of Israel. That Yahuwah said unto Moses, bring Yahuwah's rod again before the testimony, and to keep it for a token against the rebels, that thou shalt quiet, or they shall quit, and take away their murmurings, that's their gripings, their complainings, from me, that they will not die. Now, the rod was blossomed and brought forth to show, brought before them and brought to the testimony. Why? So God can look upon, in a sense, that rod and not kill them. It's really odd what it says, right? Really weird. Not that God has to look upon it. Showing that's how God thinks. His plan. That rod is going to bring forth life, not death. That life is going to be there. And the rod of God is the Messiah. And He is going to bring forth us life. Life for mankind. And stop the killing. The rebels, the ones who rebel against Him. Listen to what the people said now. These 12. This is the children of Israel should be the sons of Israel, meaning those 12, said something. Behold, we die. We shall perish. We're all going to perish. Whoever comes anything near to the tabernacle of Yahuwah shall die. Shall we be consumed in dying? The leadership got the picture. I think that rod sensed it for them. The 17th chapter is a witness. It's a witness that the high priest is my chosen one. You're not. Therefore, from now on, listen to the high priest. Now, we know that Exodus, in the book of Hebrews, now Jesus is under the what's called the Melchizedek priesthood. Now, it's kind of like it was kind of like dead for, spiritually speaking, not effect, not in power. Now it's back in power again, like it came back to life again under His death and resurrection. Now He's a high priest from a different priesthood. It's the Melchizedek priesthood. Now things start growing. From the time of the Messiah to now, it started budding. And then it started blossoming. And it's going to produce a fruit. Holy unto God. Coming from the rod. Okay? I know I'm a little long here today, but I had this long period of time. So I had to take advantage of all three places. Because I thought this is very fascinating. First rebellion, second rebellion, third rebellion. The last one is, this is life. The rod is the life. I will give you life. Put it before the testimony. Here's a seat. In that testimony is the Ten Commandments, which is written against you. Now a rod is placed there. Amazing. In my mind, wow. It's the rod of the high priest. The Messiah. My thinking. I could be way off.
The rebellion seems to grow exponentially almost. I mean, it starts with the rebellion of one man.
And feed like fire.
Yeah, and then the next rebellion was basically, you know, three individuals and maybe 250, and then the next rebellion was, you know, yeah, a lot of people.
I hope you had kind of found somewhat interesting. I find it very fascinating, this particular section of Numbers and the three stories of rebellion or presumptions, and the 15th chapter, the conclusion of it all. To me, it's a wonderful picture. I see a pattern. That's how God thinks. That's how God does. And that's the will of God. And every day I pray, God, I want to know your will today. I want to do your will. He mentioned before that about your work. When I go to work, I sit down on my computer, and before I start, I ask God to help me fulfill the function I need to fulfill today. If I design, I need to have you to help me design. If I'm just here to do, just redraw drawings, then I'm here to do redraw drawings that the company does need. Not a big priority, but nothing is small, God. I find myself, when he made that statement, I do every single day. I ask God to help me this day to do the work that is placed before me, that I may be able to do the functions. Regardless how unimportant it may appear, it's very important to God.